This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
And now, America's number one show on pop culture and politics. This is The Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth, a great nation because the United States is one of those great experiments, a diverse democracy. But a very provocative and much discussed new book, new bestseller, I should say, is about the great experiment, why diverse democracies fall apart and how they can endure. It's released a week ago. The author has been a guest on this show before. Yasha Monk is a distinguished writer. He's perhaps best known for many people by a dramatically popular piece that appeared in the New York Times back in 2017 called How I Became an American. He is a German-American, born and raised largely in Munich. And his new book is posted up at our website. Again, it's called The Great Experiment. It's under michaelmedved.com. Is the United States right now under particular pressure falling apart compared to other diverse democracies? Or is the situation we have with the divisions and the polarizations and the fragmentation in our society, is that something that is uniquely and distinctively American? Do we have Yasha Monk there? Yes, we will have him back in just a moment. The book is fascinating, and it served as the basis for the cover story in the review section for the Wall Street Journal this weekend. And it has to do with the war, if you can call it that. It's an intellectual war. It's a struggle between nationalism, that would be an America first point of view, and liberalism, which basically sees a nation as a combination of many different cultures that learn to live with each other. What I was asking, Yasha, and thanks very much for joining us on the show, and congratulations on the book, is, do you believe that the situation in the United States in terms of fragmentation and the danger of falling apart, as you put it in the title for the book, that danger is more intense and more present and more immediate for the United States than for other diverse democracies?
Well, thanks so much for having me on the show for this important conversation. No, I don't think it's more immediate or deeper than in other diverse democracies. In fact, the United States has some historical strengths that other countries don't have. But it's just a really hard thing to do. So one of the things that I tried to show in this book is the extent to which we as humans, across time, across different places, across different cultures, just have a really deep tendency to form groups and discriminate in favor of the in-group and against the out-group. And that has, over the course of history, often led to terrible conflict between different ethnic and religious groups, to wars and civil wars and genocides and forms of ethnic cleansing. And so we should realize that what we're trying to do in the United States today, which is to build deeply ethnically and religiously diverse democracy that actually treats all of its members as equals, is a very hard thing, and it doesn't actually have a clear historical precedent. So I'm pretty optimistic in the end. I'm more optimistic about the United States than about many other places in the world, but it is a big challenge, and it could go wrong unless we adopt the right principles.
And an example, and I know you write about this in the book extensively, of the world's largest democracy by population is India, where in fact the fragmentation and the dangers of the various groups falling apart are very present and often lead to intercommunal violence, particularly between Hindus and Muslims, no?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm very worried about India at the moment because it is a country that has always been a majority Hindu. But it also, since the founding of the Indian Republic in 1948, has prided itself in not being a Hindu nation in the sense that it wanted to treat all of the many different religious communities within the country, including Muslims and Christians and Jains and so many other groups,
Sikhs.
Parsis, and the current Prime Minister, Narendra Modi, wants to change that. He wants to make India a truly Hindu nation, not just in the sense that it's a majority of a population, but in the sense that the Hindus have a kind of special status, that their religion is elevated above others, that they enjoy some of the rights and privileges of citizenship in a fuller way than Muslims in particular. And given that the minority population in India is very large, there's probably about 200 million Muslims in the country, that I think really raises the risk of a form of fragmentation, which could well lead to forms of violence and civil war. So there it's particularly interesting to look at the history of conflict in India. And one of the stories I tell in the book is the contrast between two different cities in India, which are quite similar to each other, but with one remarkable difference, that one of these cities has historically experienced a lot of what is called intercommunal violence, a lot of pogroms, essentially, with many Muslims and also a significant number of Hindus dying in these violent clashes. And the other city has managed to remain relatively peaceful. And why is that? Well, one of the reasons is that they both have a rich associational life, lots of social capital, lots of people hanging out with each other and as part of all kinds of different clubs and associations and leagues and so on. But in one of them, those clubs and associations are separate between Hindus and Muslims. And as a result, when there's high political tension, rumors spread, people vilify each other, and there's no kind of counterweight to that. In the other city, by contrast, people have much stronger ties to members of different groups, and that is what, in moments of crisis, allows them to say, no, hang on a second, this rumor isn't true, we didn't do this, we have some trust in each other, and that, I think, is an important lesson for the United States and other countries as well.
You point out that one of the things that's different about the United States, and when you talk about American exceptionalism, it makes the United States, I believe, almost entirely exceptional, is that we have been a two-party democracy from our beginning. It's something the founders didn't anticipate. When they talked about factions, they were talking about many factions. What's the danger of having a country that is so clearly and right now ferociously divided between two different political parties?
So I'm a great fan of the founding documents of the United States, and I'm especially a fan of Federalist 10. Because the founders were deeply aware of the fact that virtually every attempt of the cities or countries to govern themselves failed. And that the reason why that had happened was these different factions coming to fight each other in extreme ways. When you think of a faction, think of something like the Montagues and the Capulets and Romeo and Juliet. And the natural solution for the set of people sitting there in America in the late 18th century trying to figure out how on earth do we avoid the same fate would have been to say, let's get rid of factions. Let's somehow figure out how not to have factions at all.
Okay, we do have factions, and we have to come back to that in just a moment. With Yasha Monk, he is the author of The Great Experiment, Why Diverse Democracies Fall Apart and How They Can Endure. What's the best way to ensure the endurance of the United States and our very diverse democracy? More coming up with Yasha Monk on The MedVed Show. Washington Policy Center, WPC, is Washington State's champion for free market reforms and is nationally renowned for its effectiveness in an ideologically hostile state. It's led the effort against state and local income taxes. Its research and policy analysis are relied on by lawmakers, media, and citizen activists for accuracy, fresh perspective, and to expose the political manipulation of data. Our state needs WPC more than ever, and we need you to be part of it. Become a member today at WashingtonPolicy.org. Is our country's distinctive power and prosperity the product of some happy accidents or criminal activity, or is it God's hand on America? That's the title, actually, of my most recent book. You can get a hardcover copy, personally signed by me, together with a full audiobook, and it comes to you together with an MP3 player so you can hear it anytime you want. It's all at a reduced price while supplies last. Go to michaelmedved.com, click on the banner for God's Hand on America, look for that audiobook and hardcover book bundle.
Introducing the all-new My Slippers from MyPillow. 2 years in development. Designed to wear indoor, outdoor, all day long. Made with MyPillow foam and impact gel to help prevent fatigue. And made with quality leather suede. For a limited time, you can get 50% off the new My Slippers. They're super comfortable, and you'll like them so much you'll want to get pairs of them for the entire family. Go to MyPillow.com and click on the radio listener's square and use promo code MEDVED. That's promo code MEDVED, M-E-D-V-E-D. You'll also get deep discounts on all MyPillow products, like the Giza Dream bed sheets, the mattress topper, and towel sets. Call right now 1-800-320-6280. That's 1-800-320-6280 and use promo code MEDVED. Or go to the web at MyPillow.com. The all-new My Slippers from MyPillow.
G'day, I'm Jamel that works with Dr. Joel Wallach and the GCN team with Youngevity at TeamG'day.com. By becoming an associate, you provide income for you and your family on your own hours while working from home. So contact me, Jamel, by filling in the contact box at teamg'day.com and I will get back to you personally and provide all the support you need to get started and build your Youngevity business. Teamg'day.com. Teamg'day.com.
Tehebo Tea Club's original Pure Powdy Arco Super Tea helps build red corpuscles in the blood, which carry oxygen to our organs and cells. Our organs and cells need oxygen to regenerate themselves. The immune system needs oxygen to develop, and cancer dies in oxygen. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit shopsupertea.com. The first word is shop, spelled S-H-O-P, then the word super, and then the word tea. The complete website is shopsupertea.com or call us at 818-984-6100 Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-984-6100. ShopSuperTea.com.
All across the country, people are coming together to speed up what we can learn about health. The All of Us Research Program is calling on 1 million people to join us as we try to change the future of health. For your family, for future generations, for all of us. Visit joinallofus.org and find out how you can become one in a million.
Show, speaking with Yasha Monk, who is the author of the new book, The Great Experiment, Why Diverse Democracies Fall Apart and How They Can Endure. It's just released. Yasha received his BA in history from Trinity College at Cambridge and his PhD in government from Harvard University. He's an associate professor of the practice of international affairs at Johns Hopkins University. And Yasha, you speak about diverse democracies falling apart, and we spoke about India and some of the real dangers there, particularly with a Hindu nationalist government which is in strong control of a majority in that country. What other diverse democracies trying this great experiment of living together with very different groupings, what other diverse democracies illustrate the dangers of falling apart?
Sure. So I think there are sort of three ways in which societies have historically failed. One is that different groups are so hostile to each other, so opposed to each other, that they never really managed to build a state in the first place. That's what I call structured anarchy. And we see it today still in Afghanistan and Somalia and other sort of failed states around the world. The second is a form of domination, of hard domination, in which one group wins the fight, takes over, is able to build a state, is able to build roads and public health systems and schools and all the good things that come with that, but often at the price of oppressing one group in extreme ways, such as through slavery. And the third is a form of fragmentation that we see really strongly in Lebanon, where the compromise is that a lot of the most important decisions get devolved to the level of a group, but as a result, there really isn't any form of strong common identity. There's not a sense of citizens actually sharing their interests and having a real national identity.
And you speak also about the America's fairly unique status of being, for virtually all of our history, a two-party government, and not a multitude of parties. Like we even saw in the recent French elections, there were five or six major parties competing before the primary narrowed it down to Macron and Le Pen. What's the danger specifically of that kind of party polarization?
Yeah, so this is what we're talking about just before the break. The hope of the Founding Fathers was to say, hey, we'll avoid the pitfalls of other republics and democracies that have gone wrong in history by creating lots and lots of factions. We're going to have a huge country with lots of freedoms, and rather than trying to suppress factions, we have all of these different factions. And the great thing about that is going to be that nobody can ever hope to be in control, and so everybody has to agree to live by rules which let their neighbor do whatever they want. Now, unfortunately, there's a word that doesn't occur in the founding text of the United States, and that's political parties. And we chose an electoral system which actually favors the creation of two political parties, because you need to win a majority of a district in order to be represented. And so today, we actually have what the founding fathers feared, which is two super factions, Democrats and Republicans, that deeply hate each other, and that to some extent correlate with religious and ethnic divisions we have in our country. And that certainly is a very dangerous situation.
When you say that, and again, I know that's a major thrust of your book, you wonder about how deep that correlation really is. I mean, for instance, there's been a great deal of attention recently. At one point, it was assumed that if someone were Latino, Latino is now the largest sub-non-white ethnic group, at least that according to the recent census and all the other recent figures. But Latinos now are much more fragmented between Republicans and Democrats. It's much more competitive for their support than it had been at a point when there was a correlation, when there did appear to be one party that was overwhelmingly supported by white people and then other parties that were supported by people of color. Isn't that beginning to change for the better in the United States in terms of allowing a competition among within ethnic groups?
Yes, and I think it's a very positive development, actually. So there's this idea, which I call the most dangerous idea in American politics in my book, In the Great Experiment, which is that, you know, demography is destiny, that Democrats have this inevitably rising demographic majority because non-white voters who tend to vote for Democrats in greater numbers are rising as a percentage of the U.S. population, and white voters who tend to vote for Republicans are shrinking. And that therefore we can fast-forward politics by 20 years and, when America was supposed to be majority-minority, and we know that at that point Democrats will always be winning. Now, that drives a lot of a demographic panic on the far right of politics. It also drives a lot of dangerous triumphalism among the left. And in fact, it is untrue. As we saw in 2020, the only reason why Donald Trump was competitive in that election is that he significantly gained his share of the vote among every non-white voter group, among African-Americans and Asian-Americans, and especially, as you were pointing out, Latinos. And the only reason why Joe Biden is the 46th president of the United States is that he significantly increased his share of the vote among white voters compared to Hillary Clinton 4 years earlier. So we are seeing a racial depolarization of the electorate, and that is, I think, a very heartening trend. We really need to make sure that our politicians try to lean into that, that Republicans try to build a genuine cross-ethnic working-class coalition, and the Democrats don't give up on some of those majority white states that Barack Obama won in 2008.
And again, when you talk about majority white states, it's also a question of what even white ethnicity means in the United States when there's so many different component ethnicities into white populations. You describe yourself as an optimist regarding this particular diverse democracy. The book is called The Great Experiment, Why Diverse Democracies Fall Apart. What makes you most optimistic, briefly, about the U.S.?
Well, I think if you have a starting point that is naive and that says it's really easy to build diverse democracies, then you look at the injustices and the problems today and say we can't make it work. If you have a realistic starting point, seeing why this is actually a difficult undertaking, when you can look at some of the progress of the last decade, then you can look at the state of society today and say we can build on that. We're actually doing very well by comparison to so many other societies in the history of the world, and we can try together to build a country that most people, whichever group they're part of, would actually be excited to live in.
And I'm very glad that you've decided to make your future in the United States. Yasha Monk, his book, The Great Experiment, Why Diverse Democracies Fall Apart and How They Can Endure, posted at our website at michaelmedved.com. We'll be right back.
Cancer categorizes over 100 diseases. Though we do not diagnose, treat, or cure cancer, GCN team is offering the Clemson University study where there was up to a 95% reduction in cancerous cells when exposed to a plant-derived mineral supplement. If you or a loved one are searching for answers to this horrifying disease, come to GCNteam.com or call 877-878-4203. We'll email you a copy for free. That's 877-878-4203. GCN's policy is open forum, avoiding censorship. Defense costs for words spoken outside of our control supersede the ability to deliver voices to this important talk platform. The First Amendment is the foundation of our core values. Cancel culture is silencing voices regardless of perspective. Freedom to speak is in the balance. Support the legitimacy of speech itself. Consider donating to SaveGCN.com. That's SaveGCN.com.
USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
The fate of the Remain in Mexico policy, which forces asylum seekers to wait south of the border, is now in the hands of the Supreme Court. Texas is suing to keep it in place.
The president undoubtedly has broad foreign policy discretion powers in dealing with foreign governments. That doesn't give the president a basis for ignoring a congressional command.
State Solicitor General Judd Stone arguing that under the Immigration and Nationality Act, if Homeland Security cannot detain illegal immigrants, it must send people to Mexico. Consumer confidence is slipping amid soaring inflation. The Conference Board's consumer index falling 0.3% in April after a modest increase last month. The board's Lynn Franco noting purchasing intentions are down overall, but Americans still plan to buy big-ticket items like cars and major appliances. USA Radio News.
Get healthy, not high, with 100% pure CBD powerful natural pain relief from Veterans Vitality. GCN listeners, have you ever thought about how CBD may help you? I'm sure you have heard about the many benefits of CBD. Well, here's your opportunity to try before you buy. Created by veterans and for everyone who deserves better choices, our CBD is derived from organic hemp, grown in the USA, and third-party tested. Veterans Vitality CBD saves you as much as 25 to 50% over our competition, and a portion of all sales is contributed to veteran nonprofits and events. Many of our customers have experienced improved quality of life, help with anxiety, PTSD, and overall well-being. Our products do not contain THC. They are safe, non-addictive, effective, and 100% legal. GCN listeners, get your free trial bottle of premium CBD by simply paying shipping and handling at GCNFreeCBD.com. That's GCNFreeCBD.com. Again, GCNFreeCBD.com. Offered by Veterans Vitality Premium CBD.
If you're like most Americans, you're pretty much in disbelief with what's going on in the world. As we all know, global problems are having local consequences. Too many of them. And if the peanut butter really hits the fan, are you ready? Grocery store supply chains are only as strong as their weakest link. Don't wait for them to break. Now's the time to secure emergency food for everyone in your family. My Patriot Supply is America's largest preparedness company. Our specially packaged and delicious food stays fresh for up to 25 years in storage. It'll be there when you need it. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and pick up several emergency food kits. There are a dozen different sizes that average over 2,000 calories per day. Our food kits will ship quickly and discreetly to your door. Having food storage in your home beats government food lines hands down. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com today and prepare for what's coming. MyPatriotSupply.com.
On the Michael Medved Show, we were talking with Yasha Monk about the two-party system, where the distance between the two parties seems extreme, bitter, very, very difficult to reconcile, very, very difficult to achieve compromise. It's one of the reasons that I think that there's so many of us who are grateful for some of the leadership of Joe Manchin. Because he's one of those people who's trying to talk to both parties. And the idea that he's coming up with a program meant for climate change that would also deal with some of the problems with extraordinarily high prices right now for when you go to the gas pump, and that would appeal to both interests of people selling and marketing and extracting fossil fuels, and with people who want, quote, green energy. At least somebody's trying to talk to both sides, and that's a useful thing. And one of the things that is very striking right now is they have come down from Hotline, from National Journal, their first round of 2022 House Power Rankings, where they list the 20 most competitive congressional districts all across the country, and there are 20 of them, of which the 20 seats are currently held by Democrats and Republicans, but 17 of the most competitive seats are currently held by Democrats, three by Republicans. In other words, if they split evenly among the competitive seats, that would mean a seven-seat gain for Republicans. Because basically it's the Democratic candidates who seem to be in a great deal of trouble. One Republican candidate who is not in a great deal of trouble, and this is just kind of amazing, we're talking about it yesterday. There's this big primary in Georgia where the former U.S. Senator, and he was a good senator, and I supported him. He was a solid mainstream conservative, but he's basically gone nuts on this issue of replaying and relitigating and redebating the election of 2020. David Perdue, the former senator of Georgia, is now challenging the incumbent Republican governor, Brian Kemp. And the brand new poll from University of Georgia does not look like Senator Perdue is getting anywhere at all, despite the very enthusiastic support he has from former President Donald Trump. David Perdue drawing 27% of the vote. Perdue 27% of the vote. Brian Kemp, the incumbent governor, 53%. So it's just about exactly 2-1. And closing that gap before the primary, That looks like it could indeed be a very big challenge. Elsewhere across the country, in Florida, Ron DeSantis signed another new bill. He clearly has achieved a great record of success working with the Republican legislature, which seems to be glad to follow his lead on most aspects. Ron DeSantis creating a new police force dedicated to pursuing voter fraud and other election crimes, embracing a top priority of Republicans after Trump's claims that his election was stolen. Critics have deemed the law politically motivated and unnecessary, arguing that local prosecutors can handle election crimes. The other difficulty is that we do have a real crime wave here, and it's not with voter fraud. The real crime wave we have, the one that embitters people's lives, has to do with murder and mayhem and property crimes, normal standard police force crimes. And the idea of expending a great many resources trying to find voter crimes, particularly in Florida, where Republicans have done so very well recently, how much better do you assume you're going to get with a new police force basically dedicated to supervising polling? They have a commentary here also under our call, which is comparing David Perdue, who's a strong support by President Trump, with another candidate in Georgia who also has the very strong support of President Trump, which is Herschel Walker. And they point out that while David Perdue is bottoming out, and that's the most eye-catching number out of the new University of Georgia poll, it's worth mentioning in the Senate race how stable football star Herschel Walker's numbers have been throughout the primary. His primary opponents have almost exclusively campaigned on stopping Herschel Walker, which a number of defensive linemen tried to do for many years in football, both college and professional football, claiming that his personal baggage renders him unelectable to the general election voter. Gary Black and Latham Sadler, who are the chief opponents for Herschel Walker, have barely polled in double digits and haven't landed a glove on Walker, partly thanks to him ducking primary debates. All signs point to Walker rolling in the primary on the way to a marquee matchup with Reverend Raphael Warnock, now Senator Raphael Warnock, who was elected very narrowly in that last campaign after November of 2020. The numbers on Herschel Walker are pretty amazing. He's running ahead in the primary with 66%
followed by the Agricultural Commissioner Gary Black at 7%. Meanwhile, there is a new effort to try to recapture some lost credit for something that that most Americans enjoy, which is coffee. And there's an interesting piece, and it never really occurred to me, and the piece appeared in FastCompany.com, and Liz Posner writes that for too long, much of Black history has been kept out of textbooks. Perhaps that's why Black business owners are thinking out of the box to tell important, little-known stories, infusing history into packaging, branding, and design of their products. The coffee industry is a prime example. Black history and coffee history are deeply intertwined. Coffee was stolen from African plantations by Europeans in the 1600s, incorporated into the transatlantic slave trade in the 1700s, and today it's a $100 billion industry run mostly by white executives. Well, again, to say that that is a shock, given the fact that most businesses are run by white executives. Whitewashed coffee shops, she writes, opening in Black neighborhoods are often an early sign of impending gentrification. But a wave of Black-owned brands are working to reclaim the Black birthright of coffee. Memphis-based Coffee Black put this story smack in the middle of its coffee bags. Text on the back explains how the coffee plant was stolen from Africa by two Dutch spies shortly before the first enslaved Africans arrived in Jamestown, Virginia in 1607. Actually, they arrived in 1619. We are finding our liberation as a people, and now we are liberating our birthright, the bags read. Does that mean it's for Black people only? Not at all. Coffee Black is a fast-growing brand run by husband and wife team Bartholomew Jones and Renata Henderson. Launched in early 2020, Coffee Black harnesses the power of hip-hop and social media savvy to make coffee black again. Does this mean that you show solidarity by ordering your coffee black? It's the way many of us do it. We'll be right back on the MedVed Show.
The pain was very bad, and since I've taken Relief Factor, I've been able to walk normally again, and I was having a hard time walking, and the pain was very bad. And since I've taken Relief Factor, I've been able to walk normally again, and the pain has gone away. I really am walking pain-free. So I just want to recommend this to anyone who has severe pain or any type of pain. It is really a miracle product.
Try Relief Factor. It has worked wonderfully for literally hundreds of thousands, and certainly for me. Go to michaelmedved.com, click on the banner for Relief Factor, and order your own quick start. Nothing to lose but your pain, the whole world to gain. MichaelMedved.com, click on the banner for Relief Factor, or call 833-654-PAIN, Relief Factor. Don't you get tired of commercials screaming at you to buy gold right now with inflated promises on future values? In an unregulated industry, you need honest, real experts to give you solid advice to protect your wealth and give you top picks, too, on the best coins and bullion based on real-time data and historical trends. For example, as environmental policy becomes a hot topic, one precious metal that's been significantly undervalued for years is potentially set to surge. Nick Rovich, owner of AmFed Coin and Bullion, has long recommended this precious metal. Up to 600,000 ounces of this rare metal will be needed by 2030 to produce green hydrogen. Nick is doubling down on this pick, and you should, too. Call Nick to find out more. Now, I've been friends with Nick for several years, and he's my go-to guy when it comes to coins and bullion. I trust him. You can, too. Call Nick at 800-221-7694, AmericanFederal.com. 800-221-7694, AmericanFederal.com.
If you're concerned about the power grid and want to generate your own supply of off-grid electricity, this will be the most important message you'll hear this year. Here's why. we now have a small number of solar generators back in stock. These emergency backup systems provide life-saving backup power when you need it most. And unlike gas generators, solar generators run quietly, emit no dangerous fumes, and produce an endless supply of free electricity from the sun. Whether it's wildfires, dangerous weather, power grid issues, or just getting off the grid, you'll never have to suffer through painful power outages again. Even better, all this week, radio listeners get over $700 in free off-the-grid bonuses, too. Go to MySolarBackup.com to learn more and check availability. That's MySolarBackup.com. Look for the free report, Crisis Cooling, how to make absolutely sure your meat, milk, and medicines stay safe and cool in any power outage. Yours free at MySolarBackup.com.
Extend your life with ExtendoVite.
When your doctor tells you you have bad cholesterol or blockages in the arteries, what do you do? When diet and exercise is not enough, we try medications and hope for the best. For the last two decades, I have been telling people about a natural method to help solve these problems and more. ExtendoVite can help maintain cardiovascular health and lower blood lipid levels in adults. The seven herbs in ExtendoVite are known to work together synergistically to get the results we hope for. There are many testimonials on ExtendoVite's effect on circulatory-related ailments. Get ExtendoVite today to start your journey back to a healthier life. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com or see us on amazon.com.
Extend your life with ExtendoVite.
Michael Medved Show. One of the big items of news today, of course, is the purchase of Twitter for a mere $44 billion. Just think about that for a moment. That's $44,000 million. That's so extraordinary. It's what you're talking about per Twitter user, even with tens of millions of people who do use Twitter and use it as a means of communication, you're paying a great deal of money for this vehicle, which has never been particularly profitable. And that's part of what's so amazing about it. Is it part of a conspiracy to expand the power and the influence of a billionaire, the world's richest man, Elon Musk? There certainly appears to be some worries about that, even while Elon Musk says that one of the reasons he is making this maneuver and trying to take over the Twitterverse is in order to promote free speech, which is a value that he speaks about very enthusiastically. On MSNBC, Ari Melber expressed his worry that Elon Musk buying Twitter could lead to more censorship, not less. Listen, this is clip 7.
You own all of Twitter or Facebook or what have you. You don't have to explain yourself. You don't even have to be transparent. You could secretly ban one party's candidate or all of its candidates, all of its nominees, or you could just secretly turn down the reach of their stuff and turn up the reach of something else, and the rest of us might not even find out about it till after the election. Elon Musk says this is all to help people because he is just a free speech, philosophically clear, open-minded helper.
Okay, the idea that that no one would find out about it, Twitter does not have a monopoly by any means. And especially with President Trump indicating that no, he is not going to go back to Twitter, even if he were asked, invited. I suspect he would be asked and invited. But the fact that he won't go back to Twitter, he and instead is going to be attempting to do Truth Social and to provide his own Twitter alternative. Elizabeth Warren actually jumped up with more to say about Twitter and the deal for Twitter. And this constitutes our eagerly anticipated tweet of the day.
Turn the page now to the internet.
I mean, wow, what a great, smart tweet.
Changed his password so he no longer has access to his Twitter feed.
Did you send the tweet? I did not send that tweet. My system was hacked. I was pranked.
Donald Trump hasn't tweeted at us once, and I'm starting to get worried about him.
So we have a new tweet.
All right.
Can I do the honors?
Stand by. Tweet alert.
Okay, here is what Senator Warren has to say. And what's astonishing about this is she's not a stupid person. She's just a very, very foolish person. She is obviously a tenured professor at Harvard Law School. She was before she was elected to the U.S. Senate. But she says in her tweet, "This deal is dangerous for our democracy." How? How? Billionaires like Elon Musk play by a different set of rules than everyone else, accumulating power for their own gain. We need a wealth tax and strong rules to hold big tech accountable. You'd have to take an awful lot of money away from Elon Musk to say, to make it so that he played by the same rules as everybody else. Usually, I don't know, if you have, if you're sitting there with $100 million or more, let alone the 100 billion, 1,000 times more that Elon Musk has, of course you're going to be playing by different rules. But when you say playing by different rules, how is that reflected here? What Elon Musk has said is that he wants less censorship on Twitter. We'll see whether he comes through with that. And wants it more often. And that he wants his critics to have a place on Twitter as well as his fans. And he has a lot of fans. He has one of the biggest social media accounts out there now. And that will, of course, only go up on something like this. But what is so extraordinary for me is that someone like Senator Warren says, we need a wealth tax and strong rules to hold big tech accountable. Why should you trust the government of the United States, which is a bigger, further removed force, more than you touch, than you trust big tech? If you want to say no to big tech, you can't. Nobody makes you go to that Twitter account and post regularly or to check other people who are communicating via Twitter. I am personal testimonial to the fact that you don't have to be enslaved by this company, and it's particularly not now when there are so many other alternatives and new ones sprouting up like Truth Social. The notion that you trust government, you want government rules to hold big tech accountable. The most controversial aspects of Twitter have been the rules that have been imposed, which do not appear, and sincerely do not appear to be ideologically uncommitted or open or non-discriminating based on viewpoint. The and again, the fact that this item is so controversial on the left, while people on the right, many people on the right, actually look forward to a more open approach at Twitter, I think that's telling. This is the View where they weighed in on the Musk purchase yesterday. This is clip 17.
Elon Musk going to be the person that's going to somehow manage misinformation? I'm not so sure.
No,
about
I think
that.
More concerned with Mark Zuckerberg, though, because he's
absolutely not. Because if you have $44 billion and you use it to buy Twitter, you make bad decisions.
Yeah.
Right.
$44 billion.
We need to. I mean,
he's
put
no
it
longer.
Up.
Okay, look, and a number of people are saying that Twitter has never been enormously profitable. And clearly one of the focuses that Elon Musk is going to be trying to make here is to make it more profitable, to at least return something on his investment. The New York Published, but Wall Street Journal, has an editorial today, Elon Musk, Twitter, and Free Speech. And it says a $44 billion gamble that could break Silicon Valley's monolith. What a gamble for Mr. Musk, who argues he can unlock value in Twitter that his current leadership cannot. According to the Wall Street Journal, the financing proposal he announced last week includes $21 billion in personal equity. That amounts to roughly 10% of his total net worth, going by the Forbes estimate. As a collateral on debt, Mr. Musk must also pledge about a third of his Tesla stake. It isn't every day that the world's richest man makes a bet like this. The proposed transaction will deliver a substantial cash premium, and we believe it is the best path forward for Twitter's stockholders, the company's chairman said. Mr. Musk offered $54.20 a share before his stake became public. Twitter was trading near $39. The company's board at first seemed poised to reject the deal, and it adopted a poison pill. Then Mr. Musk announced financing and began calling big shareholders to make his pitch. If Mr. Musk can strike a more satisfying balance on content moderation, maybe he's right about Twitter's hidden value. Current management is correct that most regular social media users don't want a daily bath of Russian bots, jihadist propaganda, noxious harassment, and so forth. Ditto for advertisers, who represent about 90% of the company's revenue. Yet, Silicon Valley's tech lords have decided they want to be the arbiters of speech on political topics like climate change and the origins of COVID. The Supreme Court, in a famous decision back in 1929, proclaimed that the answer for bad speech is not less speech, it's more of it. That idea by Justice Brandeis still holds, and if Elon Musk can actually make a profit on that idea, wouldn't that only strengthen this greatest nation on God's green earth?
Have you heard about vine-to-bar chocolate? It's the winemaker's chocolate, the world's first chocolate made with well-vined Chardonnay marc from the beautiful coastal vineyards of North America. Gently pressed grapes are harvested after juicing, dried and finely milled, and carefully blended into the finest dark chocolate. The Chardonnay marc contains highly beneficial grape nutrients, flavanols, and has a natural sweetness that flavors the luscious dark chocolate. Mouthwatering, flavorful, delectable dark chocolate goodness with Chardonnay sweetness and beneficial nutrients. And it's alcohol free too. It's Vine to Bar Chocolate. Order some today at vinetobar.com. That's VINETOBAR.com. Cold shipped to your door, it's Vine to Bar. Vine to Bar Chocolate. Visit us at vinetobar.com.
According to the World Gold Council, while demand for gold is surging, 72% of people reply they lack the necessary know-how to do so. Hi, my name's Adam Baratta, owner of Advantage Gold, hands down the highest-rated gold dealer in the country. The reason? We lead with education. We've taught millions of investors how to buy gold safely and securely, and our in-depth gold guide explains everything you need to know. From what type of metals to consider, if an IRA or cash transaction is best, and how you can be certain that the gold you're buying is authentic, certified, and real. Call 800-900-8000 now and get our number one rated first-time gold buyer's kit. Call 800-900-8000. That's 800-900-8000. Get the information you need to secure your future. Call 800-900-8000. Call 800-900-8000 today.